Hi there and welcome.
You're listening to Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm.
My name is Avantika and I'm a researcher exploring animal consciousness, environmental sustainability, and planetary health. I want to help bring animal perspectives to the table and transform our relationship with the natural world.
And I'm Barbara. I'm an animal communicator and retired veterinarian. My true passion is exploring the hearts and souls of animals and helping people come to a much deeper understanding of who the animals truly are at their core.
This podcast is for anyone who loves animals and nature and has an interest in their own personal and spiritual development. We'll bring you powerful conversations with fascinating people about animal and nature sentience, consciousness, and communication.
Thank you so much for joining us on this journey of love, respect, understanding, and care for the fellow beings who share our beautiful Mother Earth with us. Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm.
We are so happy to introduce you all to our guest for today. Joining us from Hawaii, please welcome Rebecca Goff. Rebecca, welcome to our show. I had the great pleasure of meeting Rebecca in Hawaii. We were in the beautiful, pristine waters of Hawaii every day of the week, swimming with the dolphins and whales. Rebecca, I think I mentioned this to you in Hawaii, but it was my first time doing anything like that. And it was absolutely incredible and life-changing for me. I loved seeing you in the water. You were so clearly deeply connected to the dolphins and to the whales, and you were like a real life mermaid right in front of my eyes. And for those of you who are listening and can't see Rebecca, she's got beautiful long blue hair and the bluest eyes. And I just remember thinking, I need to know more about this woman and her journey. And for those of you who don't know Rebecca, she is the internationally acclaimed creator of aquacranial therapy, which is a gentle, non-invasive treatment that supports the body's own natural healing, and it all happens in water. Rebecca's work in prenatal aquacranial therapy has opened a whole new spectrum in birthing, and she's given thousands of free treatments to pregnant women, infants, and toddlers, and all of this with the guidance and the support of the cetaceans. Rebecca brings people out into the ocean, and with her unique gifts and abilities, which we'll hear more about today, and with all that she's been taught by the dolphins and whales, and with all the guidance and instructions that they've given her, she's able to bring about healing and phenomenal transformation in people. And obviously, I could go on and on about her, and that's why we have her here today, so we can hear all about this from her directly. We have so many questions for you, Rebecca, and we are so honored, so happy that you were able to join us today. Welcome.
Oh, it's such a treat to be here. Thank you so much. What a special way to meet you in the ocean. You got to see me as me. In the water is home for me. And it wasn't my workshop. It wasn't my training. I wasn't there to do anything except swim with the dolphins. And so I did. And it was a treat to meet you and meet both of you. I'm so excited to be here today. Thank you so much.
Yes, you're very welcome. Well, let's jump right in. Rebecca, tell us, how were you first introduced to the dolphins and to the whales? And where did life take you from there? Tell us a little bit about your story.
When I moved to California in the 80s, people talked to rocks, which I found really interesting, but I'd been around crystals. My dad found what he called dinosaur eggs, and they were maybe 6 feet around, green eggs that he dug up out of the ground in Indiana when I was a child. And one day he said, we should break open those dinosaur eggs, and they were amethyst geodes, just amazing, most beautiful geodes. And they'd been under this 100-year-old house, so who knows how they got there. But that was my introduction to crystals, and I moved to California, and in the 80s, it was everyone talked to everything, and so I was used to crystals, and someone brought me a crystal, and they said that they worked with underwater birthing, which I find interesting. They worked with dolphins and underwater birthing in Sedona, Arizona. and the dolphins wanted them to bring me a crystal. So my thought was, great, people talk to rocks and now they talk to fish too. I had no idea what a dolphin was other than a fish. I was a pool swimmer, and reservoirs I would swim in, waterfalls, but I had not been in the ocean, so I hadn't met any dolphins yet. But I thanked them for their crystal and I put it to my head and I saw the eye of a dolphin. And it was just the eye, and it was so strong and so powerful, it kind of freaked me out a little bit. So I put it away, put it on a table, and left it there. And it later literally disappeared. It vanished into thin air. And it took me years to recognize the fact that dolphins are a group mind. They have their individuality, but they're very connected at the group mind level. So when I connected with that dolphin eye, it wasn't a dolphin, it was a lot of dolphins. And that's why it was a little bit overwhelming. Now give me all the dolphins you want. I'd love to be with them. and that's how I met the dolphin. And then that was actually my first connection with dolphins. Do you want me to go to the first connection in the water? Should we keep going?
Sure.
Okay. So I went to Lanai, an island where I live now, and my husband worked with the geometrical fields around the body, which I later used as a diagnostic tool for healthcare professionals. If you can perceive the different geometries around the body and you can affect them and move them, you can affect the physical, mental, and emotional bodies. So the particular program that he was working with, you were able to turn on the fields around the body, which were concentric circles, one going one way and one going the other way. And these fields have been used by American and Native Americans and Tibetans to light your field so you can see, you have your own light, you can go invisible by locating all different kinds of things. But the thing that was interesting about this trip was we went into the water and he wanted to do his meditation in the water. And when he had everybody in the group do it and turn on these concentric circles that were going around the body of energy, the dolphins who'd been swimming had come and were swimming around us in one direction, immediately split and went in two directions around the body. So I knew that there was something interesting going on with the dolphins at that point, so I went and took a fast course in being a certified marine mammal naturalist, and I started swimming with the dolphins, and I wanted to understand them a little bit more. No communication yet, just swimming, a lot of swimming. And then one day the dolphins told me to take infants and children to the age of 3 into the ocean to connect to their cranial fields and the cranial flow in the body, and that the dolphins would teach me what to do. So that's how I started. And they said that it would allow the body to hold higher levels of light, more light in the body. I do a little bit of research on things that I'm told, but mostly I just go for it and I do it. And then people come to me later. I'm always barefoot. And after years, somebody brought me a book about grounding and earthing and walking on the ground. So there's a lot of information out there. But with the dolphins, the dolphins initially led me to certain bays and places in the ocean where they said they had programmed the water with their sound. And that if I were to work in those areas when I did this work, that there would be a more profound effect on the physiology of the person I was working with because of the programming of the water there. And then years later, they came out with the pictures in the water and playing sound to the water and how it does affect. So I'm usually doing things and then later on the research comes out that supports what we're doing. So that's how we got in. I asked some people, hey, dolphins talk to me. Do you want to give me your babies? And I'll swim them out to the ocean and experiment. And I live on Maui. So people are like, take my baby. And that's what we did. And when I put the first child in my hand, I just put the baby so its little butt was right in my hand. So my hand was connected to the sacrum and the fluid goes up and down the spine, and that fluid, it brings nutrients to the central nervous system, and it also detoxes the central nervous system. So if there's different restrictions in that field. It's like if you took your garden hose and you bent it in half and the water doesn't flow through. So when we straighten that out and we enhance that flow, people can heal themselves of so many different things. It just gives them more health in their body and less toxins in their body. So I didn't know. A dolphin told me, just connect to the baby and see what you can do. So I just put the baby in my hand and had my hand just slightly underneath the water. And there was this beautiful golden egg shape that lit up all around the baby. And that little child, probably 5 or 6 months old, looked me in the eyes and was completely conscious. Absolutely. There was a knowingness you just don't see very often. And that's how we started.
Wow. That's amazing, Rebecca. How did aquacranial therapy start and how has it evolved over time?
I started working in the swimming pools when I was a teenager back in the 60s, and I did occupational therapy on children that had cerebral palsy. So that's how I started doing work in the water. From the time I was 13 till 16, I did that for a couple of days a week. And then they taught me occupational therapy at that point. And then I spent 4 years with an osteopath working as his assistant, and he taught me osteopathy as an apprentice. And then it was Randolph Stone who created polarity therapy. I met him and did a class with him in the 70s, and he introduced me to cranial osteopathy. And so that is how I came into cranial work. Was through osteopathy rather than through cranial sacral treatments and regular trainings, kind of a backdoor in. And osteopathy I learned with one of the really old osteopaths, so the touch is very gentle. In Europe, you still do not do surgery, regular surgery, if you're an osteopath. It's considered bloodless surgery, so there's a lighter touch with the European style of osteopathy than there is with the American style. It's a lot more modernized and Americanized, so the touch is harder. The thing with the aquacranial that is really important is the touch. With traditional cranial sacral, you're using about 4 grams of pressure. We use 1 gram of pressure or less. So it's really important to be as soft as possible, but at the same time, to not be at all invasive in the person you're touching. There's a lot of emotions that people hold, and just going through life, we have a lot of different things. So there are people that will withdraw from touch, and yet they need that love that you get when you touch them. So the trick is to touch them so lightly that they don't feel invaded in any way, and yet they feel loved and nurtured and supported.
That is so beautiful. I know for myself, I have a super sensitive body, and most forms of chiropractic, osteopathy, all these things, even physical therapy, are just too much for my body. So the fact that you use really gentle touch, and I'm sure the water makes everything just magical.
Well, if you're laying on a table, you're compressing that cranial flow right then, because you're flat against the table, where if you're in the water and you're floating, there's no disruption of the cranial flow from the force. And we don't even realize how many different microwaves and types of electricity are coming through that we tense against. We don't even realize we feel them, but because we're sensitive beings, of course we do. And when you're in the water insulates against those kinds of things. So again, you can relax further. Floating in the water, very relaxing. Being able to let go of the external stimuli, even more relaxing. And people have a tendency to stay in fight or flight mode, and so we're able to take them out of that by readjusting the cranial flow. I also taught Hatha yoga for 10 years. So I incorporate a lot of yoga into how I'm opening the joints with using the cranial work and the manipulations. I had some people come from Yoga Journal, and I told them, just do your most difficult pose for yourself. Whatever's the most difficult yoga pose for you to do, do that. And so they did it. And I got to check your body and see where you're at and how you feel. And then I took them out and gave them one treatment and brought them back out and said, now do it again. And they said it was like having done years of yoga to get the body to be that supple and to release that much and be able to move that way. I sweet talk the bones is the best way to put it. If you try to force something, eventually you might be able to force it into doing what you want, but it's going to come right back. It's much better to say, like maybe somebody's got hit in the side of the head, so their sphenoid bone is stuck, and it's supposed to have a little bit of movement. When I try to move it, if it doesn't move, instead of trying to jam it and force it to go where it is, I'll say, check this out. Look. Try this a little bit. How does this work? How's this feel? Do you like this? So it's a gentle assisting on multiple levels.
That's wonderful. I want to do it right now. But how has the aquacranial evolved over time? And what about you? How have your abilities evolved over time?
I taught gymnastics and studied physiology, so I know how the body moves, and I was a personal trainer, so I know the body from a lot of different angles. And
what haven't you done, Rebecca?
I'm really old, and I started very young. I actually started when I was like 2 or 3 with my Cherokee grandmother, and she taught me about talking to birds. The birds would fly in and land on her bed and see the colors. So I've done a lot. So where were we?
We're talking about the evolution, your evolution, the aquacranial.
Well, I love water, and I love using the body. So I've learned many different things. The dolphins didn't give me just one thing. They would give me one move and then another move and then another move. So I've learned how to manipulate the body in different ways and have different effects happen on the physiology because of that. But I've become more comfortable in the ocean. I didn't grow up with the ocean, with waves. Even though I'm a strong swimmer, I wanted to swim the English Channel when I was young. I didn't know waves. And to be able to become one with the ocean and use a wave to be able to do traction on a body. And I teach my students how you can put your feet into the sand and hold tight and get a stronger traction, or you can slide your feet across the wave and get a bigger traction. And now I use my hands and my feet. So I use my whole body on the person when I'm working, and I'm also one with the waves. So I personally love big waves. I've been where someone is on top of my hand, my hand's all the way up in the air, my feet are 4 feet from the bottom, and I'm under the water, and they're just laid out on the waves. And to watch it from shore is phenomenal. The waves are crashing. I've had students I've worked with be washed back to shore who cannot get through the waves to get back to me. The person's just floating there going, oh, this is the most relaxing thing I've ever done. So for me to be able to use my whole body and use the ocean and the waves, that has evolved. That's been my biggest evolution. You have to try it.
Oh, for sure. You know, this is reminding me of, I think I mentioned this before. I've had many, many visions of a lifetime where I think it was Atlantis, where I was a young man and I was healing people in the ocean, where I would hold them in my arms. I wouldn't go as deep and into a big wave like you do, but I would just hold them in my arms. And I had a dolphin that I was working with. And we worked together telepathically healing this person. And I don't have any details. I'm sure I wasn't as sophisticated by any means as you've become, but it was quite incredible. But what happened in this vision is that the dolphin and the person I was working with were killed by sharks. The sharks came and I got out of the water and I just swore I'd never do that again. But that was pretty powerful. So to hear what you're doing and working with the dolphins is just phenomenal to me.
It's so beautiful to hear you say that. And Bimini is, I have no idea. Atlantis could have been half of the planet. It could have been huge. I don't know. And I'm not saying Bimini was the Atlantis, but it was definitely a part or an outpost or something of Atlantis. And many of the people that have come back there have definitely had past lifetimes in Atlantis, and different things come up. And to hear you talking about the dolphins with you there, it makes so much sense.
I've never had that validated ever before, and I've researched Atlantis and dolphins and everything, so it's really a blessing. Yeah,
the story that comes up to share with you, it's I don't like to go out of the water, so I don't go to meetings, and I'm not super social. And my husband was going to meet with Randy Masters, who does work with music, and he said, I'm going to go meet with Randy Masters. He wants to talk to me about my work. I was like, I want to go. He's like, well, you never want to go anywhere. It's like, well, I want to go. And it was at a suite at the Four Seasons, and Ty and Randy are over on one side of the room. They're chatting away, and I'm sitting in the back of the room at a table with Randy's girlfriend, and I've never met her before. And all of a sudden, three bottlenose dolphins appeared. And they took their noses and they touched her head and they pushed at it and it went pop and it popped out. And they touched her head in three or four different places and literally opened up her entire cranium just like that. And I watched her do it. And I said, hey, some dolphins just touched her head and made her whole cranium open. And she said, wow, is that what happened? She goes, my head just filled with light. She said, it was like my head was so much looser and so much fuller up and just full of light. And what I find really fascinating is probably a year later, I call it dolphin consciousness. So we can release the temporals, we release the frontal bone, release the mandible, just like boom, boom, boom. And I was working on a woman from Japan who was doing an article, and they were filming and doing all different kinds of things. And we had translators going. And when it was over, we were getting a lot of different things that happened. And I brought up this story about the bottlenose dolphins that had touched the head and done that. And she got so excited. And through the translator, she told me she had been with captive bottlenose dolphins. And they had touched her head. And it felt exactly the same way as when I touched her head. She said, I could have sworn dolphins were touching my head again, and I touched in the same place that the dolphins touch her, and it had the same effect on opening her head. And so, and she was afraid to tell me because she didn't know about the dolphins. She just knew I did this water therapy and here I was. So when she heard me talk about the story that happened with the dolphins, she's like, oh my God, that actually, I can confirm dolphins did that to me and you did that to me. And I didn't know there was any connection there. So over and over again, we do get confirmation that these things actually happen. I have no doubt your memories are real.
Wow. Wow. So we understand that you work with a lot of pregnant women and young children and babies. Do you have any special stories to share with us about that?
Oh,
millions,
so
right?
Stories. Millions and millions and millions of stories. I think I made a note. Okay. One of the fun things about doing this is when I work on the mom and when baby's in her belly, what we do is we loosen the fascia, we give the babies more room. And it was actually a baby that taught me how to do a certain move. The baby had me bring my hand down to the mom's lower belly and to do fascia releases and open the area up. And then the baby slid right into it. And the mom said, oh, the baby used to kick and kick and kick me like there was no room there. And now the baby has room and can slide into it. So we do a lot of fascia release around the belly so there's more room for the baby. And we realign mom's pelvis. And if there's any compression in her spine, then we release that so it makes it easier for her to give birth. And then if there are emotional or psychological issues around giving birth that the mom has, that will come up a lot of times, so it's easy to clear. I worked on so many adults and had so many issues that came from birth. Yeah, I thought, why don't we just work on the babies? And I had already been guided to do that, but that was the reason why I decided to we'll just always treat kids for free. If we can deal with the issues when they're small and they don't have to spend their whole life with it, why not? So we open up the baby and we loosen everything up. But I also can feel something about the child a lot of times. Like if the child's going to be a runner, really going to be a really great runner. And usually there's somebody in the family and I'll ask, or if the baby's going to love dancing or singing or be very intellectual or very conscious in different ways. And I'll have parents that will track me down 3 and 4 years later. Sometimes people come here and they get their treatment when they're pregnant and then I don't see them till years later. And they'll come out to the beach where I'm working and find me and say, I wanted to tell you that you were absolutely correct, that my son does run, you know, or and dad was a runner. So a lot of these gifts and tendencies we definitely have in us when we're in the womb, and they're very easy to perceive.
But you've also talked about there was a child with a baby with a cleft palate that you were able to heal. Can you talk about that?
Okay, and first of all, in Tonga, they call me God's canoe, and I don't heal. God heals, and you can tag that any way you want and call it the way you want. But I'm happy to move with you through the process, and I do manipulate electricity, and I am able to get the body to respond to touch. So I'll take the healer on that. I was born with the touch, but I also work to do it. But it comes from within us. It really does come from within us. And everybody has that power inside of them. But so what I do is the baby you talked about, the palate had not closed. The bones, there's two bones inside on the palate, and they had simply not grown together at birth. And so by taking my finger, we're all electricity, we're all energy. And I build up the electricity in my fingers, and I was able to close those bones just to coax them into closing. And so no more milk coming out the nose when she was talking. And moving bones, especially the younger kids, is so easy. A little baby we had, I don't think I told you this story, they called me because she couldn't latch on to nurse. And so the bones in the upper mouth, the mandibles, were rolled in and under and rotated under. And normally you would think you would have to do surgery, and it's a really big deal to do that. And this baby was probably about 10 hours old when I got to her. And I was able to just very gently roll those bones out and into place. And she was able to latch immediately. And I checked on her a day later, a week later, 6 months later, when her baby sister was born 4 years later, never had any other issues. So babies' heads are like little water balloons when they're first born. I've even had babies born with hematomas, and we've been able to have the hematoma disappear within a couple of minutes after we've been doing the treatment. We do the first treatment sometimes if it's a water birth. I've done my first treatments on babies when they're still connected to the umbilical cord. And then after dad, mom, you know, is with baby, and then they cut the umbilical cord and dad. And then I take the baby and do the first, another treatment, or the first treatment if I haven't done it in the water, while the midwife is delivering the afterbirth. And so that's a very quick process. And in that amount of time, grandmothers who are baby nurses and have seen lots of babies born, babies are pretty tight when they're born because they've been in the same little ball for a long time. We can have them completely relaxed where they lay out flat within minutes of being born just by releasing everything in the body.
Wow. Amazing. So Rebecca, you've talked to us before about how you work for the dolphins, that they guide everything that you do. Can you tell us about how you actually receive information from the dolphins and from the whales? How does that information come to you, and how do you interpret it and make sense of it?
Paying attention. My grandson said the other day, things are imagination. And we were talking about bilocating, and he said, oh, that's imagination. I said, but what happens when people see you in one place and people see you in the other place at the same time. So that's when we step outside of imagination. But imagination is a good key. It's a good way to go. Opening your imagination, allowing yourself to be open-minded. And we can move the bones in your head to help you be more open-minded, by the way. So anyway, when they talk to me, it comes in multiple different ways. And you learn to recognize it. Sometimes it's just a picture. Sometimes, boom, here's a picture and I see something. And my favorite one to share is about I was swimming with dolphins in one place on the island. Lots of dolphins having a lovely time. And the dolphins showed me this picture of myself in my boat somewhere else on the island with 500 dolphins around me. And it's in front of a very specific resort. So I knew exactly what they were talking about. And then I just start talking. It's like, you want me to what? Get in my boat and go where you are and quit swimming with you now? And they're like, yes, yes. So it's, I see pictures, I hear things, I get feelings. A lot of times I feel it in my aura, like tickles in my aura or excitement. I'll be going one place and they'll say, go here. And I don't even realize at first it's the dolphins, but I know I'm supposed to turn and go somewhere. And so I do. I follow that guidance, whatever it is. And sometimes usually it's because they want to be somewhere. And maybe it's for me to swim, or maybe it's for me to get someone else in the water. Once, I know we're kind of going sideways here, but once they said, we want you to go to a specific place. And it's a knowingness. Telepathy, you hear it, but it's not like hearing voices talking. It's kind of a different thing. It's hearing, it's an awareness of what's being said. So they told me to go to a place where I do not normally see dolphins and where I don't usually swim. So I just pulled my car over where they told me to, and I got out of the car, and my gosh, there were dolphins there. I could see them leaping, big waves, and So I got on my fins, and I started to head out to the water to swim out to the dolphins, and there were these young girls there that were probably 16, 17 years old, and they stopped me, and they said, what are those things out there? They've been playing and going wild. I said, well, those are dolphins. They go, are you going out there? I go, yeah. And they go, well, we want to go. They go, how do you get through that? And they pointed at a big wave that was coming in, and I said, and we were on lava rocks. This was not like a sandy beach or walking into a pool. It was lava rocks in the middle of nowhere. And there were good sized waves coming. So I told them, I said, if you don't know what those waves are, you do not belong in them. You know, you have to dive. They go, well, how do you get out? I go, well, I dive underneath it. I go, but you know, if you hit it wrong, it's going to smash you all over those rocks. So, you know, you have to be really, really careful with what you're doing. So I shoot out to go swim with the dolphins. And of course, all the girls came with me, right? You know, so the dolphins did not call me that day to come and swim with them. They called me there to get those girls into the water with them and to make it even juicier. So we get out there and the girls are all with me and everybody's swimming. And then a few minutes later, one of my students who I know, who was not supposed to be anywhere near this area, shows up and comes swimming out to me. I was like, Rachel, it's so good to see you here. How did you get here? She goes, oh, I don't know. I was just like driving down the road. And then I saw your car. And I thought, well, if your car's there, there must be dolphins there. I go, we've never swam with dolphins here before. She goes, I know, but you know, I saw your car. And then I saw dolphins. So I thought, I'll come here. I said, well, the dolphins called you. And she's like, oh, no, dolphins don't call me. What makes you think they called me? I said, Rachel, how often do you randomly go driving around the middle of nowhere in your car? And she's like, oh, well, never. So, yeah, the dolphins, they call multiple people at different times. And they call them in different ways. Sometimes it's just a feeling. Sometimes, like I said, it's just excitement in my aura. Sometimes I just know. One time I got in my car and I was leaving the ocean. I was going home, which was to the left. And they told me to go to the right. And so I'm like, why do you want me to do this? You're not down there. I'm not going to swim with you. I know I'm not going to swim with you. Why are you telling me to go this way? They're like, just get in your car, go to the right. So I went to the right and there were some kids hitchhiking. I thought maybe this is why I'm stopping. And it, about a block further, there was a car accident and a couple of young kids had went off the road and they had hit a tree head on. And there was a pregnant woman bending over into the car when I drove up and pulling a little two-year-old out of the car. And so I stopped and went over and said, I work with babies. Can I help you? And she said, I wasn't in the car. She said, we saw it happen when they hit the tree. And the baby was about 2 years old and had a seatbelt on, but no car seat. And so, you know, bruises, and there'd been a lot of force when the kids were speeding, and they, you know, there was alcohol and speed involved, and the boy's father did not make it. But the baby, when she pulled him out of that car, unhooked the thing, pulled the little boy out of the car, and when she turned around and told me that she wasn't in the car, she had just stopped, that kid leaped off of her onto me and started just jabbering away. And so I held him and was treating him and holding him while I was treating him and walked him away from the car so he wouldn't see anything that was happening. And about 20 minutes later, that woman came back over to me and she says, I've been watching you with that baby. She said, that baby came out of the car. He was a tight little ball. She goes, he's twice as long as he was when you took him out of that car. And so, you know, sometimes it's like, hey, come swim with us, or there's a baby whale out there. And sometimes it's like, hey, there's going to be a car accident around the corner. Go help.
Wow. Well, that really speaks volumes to the attention that you're paying to what they're telling you and really trusting in that. And I'd love if you can tell us more about that process of really trusting what you're getting, because I think a lot of listeners who are tuning in, I bet they've had really incredible, meaningful interactions with nature and with animals. They've probably received information from them as well, maybe knowingly or unknowingly. You know, we're actually communicating with them. So what do you have to say to them in terms of listening and really trusting what you're receiving? And, you know, you not only listened, but you followed through as well and really acknowledged what they were telling you and went with it.
Spend time in nature to begin with. Really spend as much time in nature as you possibly can. You had mentioned something to me in one of our previous conversations about square rooms and being inside, and it reminded me when I first started going to Tonga, we leased an outer island, and I would pitch a tent and catch water on the tarp and live outside with no lights, no electricity, nothing for 2 or 3 weeks. And the day before I had to fly back to Hawaii, I would go from our little island to a bigger island where the planes would fly out and spend the night in the hotels, because if the waves were rough, you wouldn't get in for the airport. And when I would walk to the door of the room in the hotel, I would stop outside the room, and it was so conscious of, I can't believe they want us to live in these little boxes. We are so cut off from nature, and we are nature, and we have so much of a connection. Walking barefoot on grass, there's an electromagnetic field that it helps to keep you balanced. And so it's hard to hear and to trust if you're always off balance. And a lot of what we do does keep us off balance. And I'll give you a little trick today that I use with people. When I'm teaching my classes, when you have a narrow focus, when your focus is narrow, it's very masculine, it's very psychic, it's very pointed, it can be a little bit invasive. And your brain, literally, your focus moves in a certain way, so your brain works in a certain way. And what I teach people is to do what I call going wide. And so you can do this. You just put your fingers together and watch both fingers, and you start pulling them apart, and you keep watching both fingers at the same time. That's it. Watch both fingers a little bit slower. Barbara, a little slower. Whoa. And see, right about there, Barbara, for you, it starts, your thinking starts to shift. Now, see, you started to think. And you looked at me and you switched your eyes. And now if you go back out, you're more in a feeling mode. And so the wider we can go, and this is a very simple exercise, but you'll start to feel, you'll start to perceive when you're in a narrow focus and when you're in a wide focus. And people tend to be angrier when they're in a narrow focus. And what do we do all day long with cell phones these days? It's caused people to be much more narrow focused. When I first started teaching this, nobody was running around with cell phones. And I've noticed now it's more shocking to people to go. They're so used to being narrow focus that I've had them go to the wide focus and start crying because it's such a different feeling and it shifts how your brain is. So if you practice, and my husband and I just talked about this because there's so many people on Maui right now. People are walking and they're running and they're riding bikes, they're on their scooters and the cars, and no one is watching anyone. Everybody's very focused on where they're going and what they're going to do. And they're not aware of what's going on around them. And for survival, let alone to communicate with animals, we really need to be able to open back up. And fear will shut you down and make you very, very normal. So if you can open your mind, you will move into the part of yourself that is knowing, that does know things. And I find that repetition, and when whatever works for you, keep a diary. When I first started seeing colors, I'd be driving down the road and a color would come zipping through my windshield and I would feel a certain person. So I would look and see what time it was. I'd look at my clock in my car and see what time it was. And then I would call the person later that I felt and say, "Were you thinking about me at about this time?" And after a while, it's like, "Oh yeah, absolutely, I was." And then I would start to recognize different people's colors. So I would know, oh, so-and-so is here visiting me. And by following up on that and checking it out, I was able to know that it was real. So if you want, however you do that, keep a diary, make notes, check up on something. If you feel someone, you know, when you get that urge to call somebody, everybody's had that. An urge to call somebody and then you call them up and they're like, "Oh, wow, I was just thinking about you." Or, "Oh, I really needed someone." For a while, I said, "I'm only going to do what God tells me to do." I was very specific about it. If I didn't feel like God told me to go do something, I didn't do it. I drove everybody crazy because I was in a corporate world and I switched over to this other side. But it got so I would walk in the door to see people that I hadn't seen in years. And they would say, "Oh my God, I prayed to God today that someone would come and help me and someone would do this." So your intention is huge. You know, connect with nature. Remember to breathe. Breathing exercises. I cannot recommend breathing exercises too much. Doing yoga. Yoga will connect you. Yoga was something that really, when I was first introduced to yoga in the very, very early 70s in Indiana, I ate meat 3 times a day. I came from a very different background. And after doing yoga a few times, I could see everything inside of me. And it kind of tripped me out to the point where I didn't do yoga for a while. But yoga will make you more sensitive. Wherever you're at, yoga is very, very helpful. And it's, if people could feel what I feel when I touch the body, forget about sensitivity and everything else. If you want to be comfortable in your body and be flexible in your body and be young in your body, do yoga, do yoga, do yoga. And not the philosophy, you're totally on your own with that one, but the gentle yoga. In recent years, people would come to me and they had injuries from yoga. And it was being pushed into doing certain poses. It's like only Americans could take yoga and turn it into a competition sport. You know? The whole point is relax. So yeah, relax, be in nature, breathe, and go wide. Be aware of what's going on around you. And test yourself. If you're really interested in going further with this, if you have a hunch, act on it. If you feel like something's going to happen, do it. And the more you do it, the more the universe catches on and the more whatever part of yourself there is. Same with the dolphins. If they know you know what they're doing, they're on it. They will do it 10 times more to help you learn more. I hope that helps. I kind of wince.
Yeah, no, that's huge. Actually, I'm thinking back to when I was in the water for the first time, you know, thinking I'm going to be near dolphins. And it was actually so challenging for me to see what was happening. I felt like everyone there had done this before and they were like, "Oh, look, they're over there and they're over there and they went that way." And especially you, right? Like you seem to know the whereabouts and it was so new for me. But I think that what you just said about focus probably had a lot to do with the two, because I was coming in looking at one thing at a time and I could only concentrate on what was right in front of me. But I guess the more I get in the water and the more you know, I make it a point to do that and to practice what you've just taught us, the more I'll be able to really take in what's happening around me and be responsive to everything and not just what's right
in front of
me. And
you totally got it. That's exactly it. Like you said, you were looking. I was feeling. I could feel them in my field. Yeah. I could feel. And when I look for whales, I just open my heart and let my heart go out. And then the whales will feel and respond. So you absolutely correct. That's a great way.
Yeah. And thank you so much for sharing all those tips. That leads me to the next question, which is something you said to us last time we met, that we are so much more than we realize. Can you tell us what you meant by that and why you believe that?
It's like that was the one question on your list I didn't make any notes on. I was like, oh, wow, that is such a huge question and such a good question. But I can bring it down.
Yeah. And what you just talked about, what you just shared about how we have these intuitive nudges. We have a lot more going on than we're perhaps not paying attention to. And when we tap into that and validate that for ourselves, then that can continue to happen for us, you know?
When I was probably about fourth or fifth grade was when I first heard that humans, for the most part, only use 10% of their brain. And at that point, I thought, what a waste. Why is that? And so I did anything that came along that would help me to expand my brain, feeding it. I ate lots of blueberries. So there's good brain things and bad brain things. And the ones that you choose will make a difference in your brain. And the brain is amazing because you can have brain injury and do damage and that part will melt and go away. But then you can grow new areas and you can grow new neural pathways. And people that can't do things one way can grow a pathway to go another way. And so a good, healthy brain is really helpful to begin with. And there are a lot of different brain exercises. They had these posters that were really popular for a while that looked like they had a lot of dots on them. And when you would look at them and you would go wide, you would see pictures inside of it. We'd have people calling us up at 3 a.m. going, we just found the new level of the pictures and the dot pictures. And there's, you know, now Facebook spreads those kinds of things around where you'll see the picture. It's like, one side is, if you look at the picture, you see a duck, you're working on the left side of your brain. If you see the dog, you're on the right side of the brain. Well, why not look at it so you can see both? Exercise your brain. Your brain can be exercised and it can be expanded and you can use different parts of it. When my son was 6, 7, 8 years old, I practiced telekinesis with him. And there were college courses at the time in it. So you can do many different things, but it's like anything. When you learn to walk, first you learn to crawl. Some people are just born flying, and that's going to happen. And some people are going to be marathon runners, and other people just run. But we all have way more skills than I think we use. And frankly, I think we probably use less than 10% of our brains these days, unless we're working on doing it differently. Creativity, if you use it or lose it, creativity is being able to expand your mind into different areas of consciousness. And if you're locked in all the time to watching TV and watching movies, books will expand your creativity. And some movies and TV do too. But choose wisely what you feed your brain. And what you're looking at is what you're feeding your brain. So if you want it to grow, choose books and videos and things that will explain how to use your brain in different ways. The military has a technique that they used back in the 80s for border crossing guards to see auras. And it's a very simple technique. We would have people seeing auras in 5 or 6 minutes. And normally, if you're 8 years old and you tell your mom that you see this blue color all around your cat, they're going to go, oh, you know, something's wrong with your eyes and take you to the doctor or say, no, that's not there. And when kids hear, when they get shut down, then they won't go there. because everybody wants to be loved, everybody wants to be liked. And if somebody says you're crazy or that's not true, or they get angry at you for saying it, you're not going to go there anymore. So we're born wide open for the most part. And then we have a tendency to get shut down. And that was just one of the things where I was lucky. I didn't have anybody around me shutting me down. I was on every level. My mother's, you know, writing down what I'm saying instead of telling me I couldn't possibly know things. And so you can put yourself into different environments to expand on what you want. You do create your reality in so many different ways. And we also create it as a group. So where you can choose to be happy, choose to be kind, choose to be in nature, listen to the trees, listen to the wind. You know what I mean, Barbara.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to add to what you said, and everything you said is just beautiful and true, is I didn't grow up that way with parents who understood all this stuff. And, you know, so I was pretty shut down. And what I discovered, and it took some time to figure it out, was that writing is my way of communicating. You know, and we talk about focus and intention, but when I'm sitting down and writing and I focus on a particular animal or group of animals or something like that, and then I just start writing, it just comes. And it may be because I've done journaling as long as I can remember, but that's another tool that when people aren't able to be right in nature and they're just in their little house trying to talk to dolphins, that's how I've had most of my communications with dolphins, is just sitting down, being quiet and focusing. Yeah.
And journaling, and that's a great tool. Yeah. Nice. Keep a diary, make your notes, do your journaling, because you allow yourself a certain amount of freedom when you go there. It's private, it's personal, you can go anywhere you want. And then as you open to the flows of whatever is out there that is meant to come through to you.
Yeah. And
it's like change. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you go. No, no.
No, you go. No, you go. I was going to ask you to, I'm changing the subject. So if you have something else to say.
Okay. No, no.
Okay. I was going to ask you to tell us the story of the melon-headed whales that you told Avantika and me. That was so powerful. Would you go into that story?
Yes. We had three or four times when melon-head whales beached in Maui, and they just went up on the beach and they died. And it was within a very short period, just a few years ago. Very few years ago, that it happened several times in the same area. And people, the big deal for many years was the sonar being the issue with all the cetaceans. So people automatically go there. But because I've seen some of the things happening in the ocean, I had a feeling that wasn't it. I know we don't have food out there. And I know the waters are not as clean as we would like them to be. So we waited until the autopsy results came in. And if it is sonar, then it blows out the eardrums. And that had not happened. So it had nothing to do with sonar. But what they did find in the autopsy is that melon-head whales should be eating fish. So in their bellies, there should be fish parts, you know, fish tails and bones and that kind of thing. There were no fish parts whatsoever. There was seaweed, and they don't eat seaweed, but you eat whatever you eat when you're starving. And there was plastic. So they were full of seaweed and plastic, and so they were starving and malnourished, and then they had toxins in their body as well that had killed them. And everything you flush down the toilet, everything you wash down your sink, every chemical you use when you wash your cars ends up back in water. And in many cases, it ends up back in the oceans or in the water table, or in then goes back up, evaporates in the rain and comes back down again. So the more we live a chemical fueled life and a toxic life, the more we put that into our atmosphere, into our water and into our land. And we've done that to the point where there's so much plastic in the ocean and not enough fish. And that's another side of it. People talk about overfishing, but we have to be conscious about our resources. And if you're going to take down trees, plant trees. If you're going to take fish out of the water, make sure that you're putting fish into the water. And we've just become very unbalanced in nature. So I talked about this quite a bit after the Mellon-headed whales died from beaching and they had all starved. And after I'd been talking about it for a month or two, I was at the beach doing a treatment in shallow water on someone. So we were only in about 4.5 feet of water. It wasn't very deep. And it was very heavily populated area, a lot of tourists around, a lot of people in the water. And there were 13 mellonhead whales and 3 bottlenose dolphins. And they came in a single file line. And like if I was here, they came in and they came all the way around where we were. And I mean, you could just, people were like looking down and their fins are above the water going, what is this? They're right here. And they all came and they all circled around. And the love that I could feel from them was so amazingly beautiful. And I could feel gratitude, love and gratitude. And I know it was because they know that I'm talking about them and what, and that I care and what's happening out there and spreading the word about them. And they came to acknowledge that and maybe to give a story so other people would get it, that this really is happening. And there was a dive master there teaching dive classes. He said, Rebecca, I've been in the water, I can't remember, it was at least 20 years, could have been 40. He said, I have never, ever seen anything like that. He goes, I've seen a lot of things with you. He goes, but that, he goes, that was unbelievable. Yes, they're so aware of us. And it's, I sing to the whales. And at first, I don't know why I did it, but it does put you in a different brain part. So there's the part of me that's just all love. And then there's the part of me that's scientific. It's like, well, why is that? And when you sing, you go to a different part of your brain than when you're just talking. So at one point, I thought, well, maybe I just sing because it puts me, it's not that the dolphins come because, or the whales come because I sing, it's because it puts my brain into a different place. I'm always trying to rationalize it all, right? And really, it's the miracles that are there. But I do sing to them quite often. And one day, my husband and I were sitting on our little boat, and we dropped the anchor, and we were having lunch, the boat wasn't moving, and a whale came up, and it squeezed up against the side of the boat, and it rolled up and looked at me. And then another whale came and squeezed up against the other side of the boat, and rolled up and looked at me. And then one came to the front. My husband's just walking around watching it. I'm like not even eating my sandwich because you're not supposed to approach that close, right? It's like, I won't move, you know? And the fourth whale came. So all four of the whales were around the boat and holding the boat. And they sent me a picture of myself on the front of the boat and leaning over the front of the boat and singing to them. And then they all went under the water and they all started singing at the same time. And it was so...
Oh, that's so beautiful.
They're amazing.
You know what? That reminded me. I never thought about this, but I was kayaking with orcas in the San Juans, and I wrote this song to the orcas. I mean, I had never written a song. I didn't sing, but I wrote this whole song to the orcas, and it started off a whole progression of me writing all these little animal spirit songs. But it was the orcas that triggered that. And then when I was with whales in Tonga, I was singing again. I made up this silly little song that a friend and I were singing as we were in the boat. I never thought of it before, but you're right. Their energy just kind of stimulated that somehow. It's amazing.
See, they talk to you.
That's so funny. Yeah.
It's part of it. I can hear them right now. It's like, I was going to say this anyway, but so it's important that when I first decided to write books about this and about the whales and everything that's going on, I wrote one about the work that I did, but I'm doing another one now. And it was for my grandson because this was before we had any lockdowns or anything, but it was like, something's happening that's changing the world. And you need to get your stories out there so people know that we did these things and they know that you can do this and this exists. And when I talked to you, the whales popped in for just a second. I was listening to your story there. And it's like, it's important for us to tell these stories because when we tell these stories, it stimulates remembrance in other people. And it's like, well, how do you know? And it's like, oh, I had something like that. And that's happened with me a lot when I'm working with my people and I'll say, go wide. I can tell if you're going wide or not. And so, and I'm like, nope, you're not there. Oh, now there you are. Now you're wide. Oh, now you're thinking, you went back again. And by talking to it and pointing it out as we move, people start to recognize it more. They're like, well, I felt something, you know, but now every time I feel that something, Rebecca goes, there you are, go wide, you're going narrow. So by just putting attention on it and watching what's happening, we develop more our means of communication that's beyond verbal.
You know, you told me in Hawaii, your motto is healthy oceans, healthy children. I'd love for you to tell us more about that. This is something we really connected on and talked about when we were together. What is the connection between our oceans and our children?
Well, if you have to have healthy children to have a healthy ocean, you have to have a healthy ocean to have a healthy children. You just cannot have one without the other. If our oceans are dying, so are our children. It's what's happening in the ocean is what's happening to all of us. When you look out there on the reefs and you see what's happening, it's a good sign of what's happening across the planet. And if the children can feel that the oceans are dying, if they're dying because they don't have enough food, what's happening now? We're now having food issues. So it really takes both. We teach children how to count fish in the ocean so they know how many fish are out there and if there's more or there's less. And we teach them, okay, fish over here, but don't fish over here. We need a place for the new fish to grow. So if the children don't go out in the ocean and swim, which is healthy for them, and aren't aware of how the ocean is populated and how that in turn comes back to our food sources, or if the kids are throwing plastic into the ocean and that's what the fish are eating, and then when we eat fish, they've already found all these little teeny tiny pieces of plastic that are in fish. So we can't just take care of the kids and we can't just take care of the oceans. We have to understand that you can't have one without the other. If you want to have healthy kids, you have to have a healthy ocean. If you want to have a healthy ocean, you need to have healthy kids. So we support programs that empower children to understand this. Right now we have our Run Bag program going. I've done a lot of work with going in after hurricanes and earthquakes to work on people. And it's can be a while before people can get in after there's a disaster. So the people that are on the ground are the ones that are able to help. And so what we're doing is we're teaching kids, how can you help? We're getting kids trained in CPR. What happens if you're at the beach and you're swimming with dolphins and you come out and you have a heart attack, you know, and you're just with your child? And one of my friends does autism surfs. So we're teaching the parents and getting them set up so they're able in an emergency to be able to take care of themselves. And this also, we're using regular first aid supplies. We have wound care. You want to be able to clean. You need sanitation. You have to clean a wound and you have to dress it so they don't bleed to death or get an infection. So what you need to know on the spot is stop the bleeding. Stop the infection. But we also teach them to use alternative healthcare things like tea tree oil for cleaning wounds and lavender for small burns and cuts. And now we're putting Purify as an essential oil into the emergency run bags because centipede bite. I had a centipede bite barefoot in Hawaii, got bit by a centipede last week, put a couple drops on and all the swelling, burning, itching stopped immediately. And by teaching kids that they have and sourcing things to give to them to use when there is an emergency. And a lot of these kids came to me when they were 2, 3, 4 years old. I've treated them. I've been in the ocean. Now they're coming back 15, 16, 20, 25, and they want to be able to help other people. And the bags we give them, they float. So it's a run bag is something you've got in your door. You grab it and go. So besides having, we have oils, essential oils for indigestion. And then we also shock is a big problem. And that is something that doesn't get addressed in your tip. The emotions don't get addressed in a typical first aid kit. So we use a couple of oils, one for anti-anxiety and one for comforting. And these are things that are instantaneous. And then But what happens if the emergency goes on for a while and you run out of what's in your run bag? So what we're teaching kids now is also how to source things in their area, like oregano, which is great for infections and grows wild at the beach. When I did the run bag class, when I came over and swam with you on the Big Island of Attica, I did a training over there and we did it down at the beach. And there was oregano growing wild right there at the beach.
So Rebecca, tell us and tell our listeners how they can learn more about what you're doing and how they can support you. You're doing some incredible work. I'm sure they'll want to hear more about that.
Well, we've been doing the work longer than we've been doing the social media, but Blue Hui Inc., B-L-U-E, Hui, H-U-I, Inc., on Facebook. You can find our fan page on Facebook, and you don't have to be a member of Facebook. It's open to the public. And then BlueHui.org is our Instagram. And there are links to our projects that we're doing there. We've partnered with doTERRA Healing Hands right now. We're doing a fundraiser where they match what we bring in. I have to give a shout out to doTERRA and the culture there. They give away more product around the world than probably any organization out there. And their Healing Hands Foundation, well worth checking into. They do things from child trafficking, stopping child trafficking, to replanting forests with sandalwood on the Big Island. Just a phenomenal group of people. Their oils are really great. I've worked with them at doctors, hospitals, universities. They're very pure. I can trust them, so I know what I'm using, and I've used them for years. But it's the culture, the people that have put that business together and how much they get back. And when you have millions of people that have come together that want to help other people, that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Tap into it. Thank you for the shout. Let me do that little shout out there. Blue Hui Inc. is our work that we're doing.
Thank you for that. And so is there anything you want to say to our audience before we end this podcast?
Well, I have to say to you, Barbara, I love you. And I have to say, I love you all. And Avantika, and your energies are just so beautiful. And I feel so blessed to be here today. And I guess that's what I would say is stay blessed, stay blessed. The whales once told me when someone wanted to get them all into a trauma about something, they said, oh, Rebecca, the only thing anyone can ever do to you that can hurt you really is to take you out of your heart. And don't let us do that. Don't let them use us to do that. So you're all beautiful. Everybody listening out there, you are beautiful. And there are blessings everywhere. Sometimes they're harder to find. But concentrate on the blessings and the beauty in your life. And follow me. follow me into the ocean and swim with whales and dolphins and stay blessed.
Oh, Rebecca, this has been so extraordinary. I love you too. And it's just been such a treat. Oh my God. And I feel like I've learned so much. You know, I've loved dolphins and whales for a long time and I've been in the water with them, but nothing like the degree to which you've been with them and the work you've done. And it's just extraordinary. And I'm so grateful to you for your dedication, your commitment, everything you've done for so many years, for so many people and for the animals. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, I just want to add to that, Rebecca, just echoing that gratitude that Barbara has. Thank you so much for all your hard work in helping others heal and get better, and your commitment and your dedication to the oceans, to our cetacean friends. For me, you are a true testament to what can happen if we're open, if our hearts are open, and what can happen when we listen and follow the guidance that's being given to us. And honestly, it's a responsibility more than anything, I think, not just to receive the guidance and information that we get, but also to act upon it and to follow through. And then seeing the incredible life-changing impact that it can have, and whether or not people understand what it is you're doing or how you're doing it, you're still doing it. And it's so inspiring. And it makes me feel like there are no limits to what we can do if we operate from an open and loving heart. I love you too. Thank you so much.
I love you. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Thank you. Look forward to seeing you again sometime.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us on today's episode of Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm. To view the show notes for today's episode, visit animalsanduspodcast.com. You can also find us by that name on Facebook and Instagram.
And be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes right away when they're released. And if you've enjoyed our podcast today, we'd love it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app. And before we go today, we'd like to share a short blessing for the animals.
We'd like to end this podcast by taking just a moment to be quiet. And we give thanks and blessings to these amazing animals that we share our lives with. They give us so much and ask for so little in return. We hope that you can keep the animals and all living beings in your heart and in your mind as you go about your day. Thank you so much for being here with us today.